Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of the worldwide leader in sports, ESPN.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Yahoo.
Hello, I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And you're in Puck Soup's special Super Wombo Stanley Cup playoff preview episode that we're dropping early. I tried to convince the boys that we should drop this on Friday so we could pretend that we didn't watch the first few games and see if there were any significant injuries and get a vibe for the series. But apparently these guys like integrity. So what are you going to do? Before we get to picks, though, we need to talk about coaches in the sense that a guy with a mustache said, "I'm taking my talents to South Beach," on the day that we do this podcast. Joel Quenneville, the new head coach of the Florida Panthers. And don't you guys feel like shits for saying that Dale Tallon should be fired when he's the reason that they have Joel Quenneville now?
No. I think that, like, you know, I think they needed to make a coaching change. I think that they got the best guy available, obviously. And obviously Dale Tallon had a big role to play in bringing him aboard. But, like, if you're Joel Quenneville and you're choosing between, let's say, the Flyers, the Ducks, the Sabres, and the Panthers, aren't you
and
just
the Kings.
And the Kings. And the Oilers, maybe. I think pretty clear number one on the top of that list is the Florida Panthers. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm maybe a little bit surprised that the Sabres don't seem to have been more in play here. But, you know, I don't know if that's because he just had already made up his mind he wanted to go to Florida, or if maybe Dale Tallon was working this behind the scenes and got a head start on everyone. I would have thought Terry Pegula would have taken the chance to throw lots and lots of money at another head coach. Maybe he did, but I get why. I think this is a good fit. Like, you weren't going to have a legitimate, ready to go Stanley Cup contender suddenly be looking for a coach. So, it's a reasonably good fit, and good to the Panthers to get it done now so that they can lure over those free agents that they are.
Yeah, I mean,
planning to.
This is sort of a harbinger of things to come. I don't think that he's doing this without full knowledge that Panarin and Bobrovsky aren't going to jump too. To speak to Ryan's point, I think it's a good one, which is that it's actually the perfect job for Joel Quenneville. It is a place where you probably can be successful given what's on the roster and what's going to be on the roster next season. But it's also a place where the bar is set basically on the ground. It's like at the Earth's core, the bar is set so low when you're the head coach of the Florida Panthers. Like, they don't make the playoffs. They've never won anything of consequence since the mid-1990s. It is like, if Joel Quenneville gets this team to the second round of the playoffs within the next 2 years or 3 years, he'll be seen as one of the best coaches in the history of the franchise. So, like, what a great spot to be in. You get to live in around Miami. You get to be on a team that's got a good core of talent, better than most. And no matter what you do, it's going to be better than what they've done in the last 15 years. That's pretty good.
As long as GM doesn't give your best players away to Seattle for a handful of magic beans.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, and the good news, too, is that, you know, Quenneville does have a lot of experience coaching teams with a bunch of older players who have inexplicable contracts. So this is going to work out pretty well, I think.
How long before Jonathan Toews requests a trade to Florida to be with this boy?
Yeah, no kidding.
ESPN is reporting.
Exactly. That really does, like, make Florida a destination for players, too. Like, I guess Florida is a destination because you don't pay taxes and the weather's nice or whatever. But, you know, you also had to go, well, I'm going to play for Bob Bow Boo Boo
Baba Booger.
Booger? I don't know about that. Whereas this guy, you go, oh, Coach Q? Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
It's not, maybe great. Not the Q Florida residents wanted to show up this week, but a Q anyway.
It is.
Like, I'm trying to remember the last time that Florida was the big winner in any kind of sweepstakes like this.
Well, they got Brian Campbell that time.
But they got Brian Campbell that time because they were one of the only teams that could handle his cap hit, and also one of the only teams he would waive for because Dale Talon was there. So they didn't really win him. They were like one of the only places that could get him. This is like if they end up with Quenneville, Panarin, and Bobrovsky. Like that's a win for this organization that I think like there was a better chance in the mind of a lot of people of this team relocating before ever getting an off-season win like this.
Yeah, no, this is huge. You know, they do have some real problems to address on the roster, and maybe Dale Talon's not the guy to address them. But if you're going to add even one of those two guys, that instantly makes you a much better team going forward. Like, goaltending was what sunk them this year, and getting a guy who, after a slow start, was pretty good for a good chunk of the season and has two Vezinas, like, you know, you're going to be in the situation where 3-4 years from now, when he's in his mid-30s, you're not so happy with the contract, but...
Yeah, they're going to overpay
for the time being. They're
badly
fine.
Badly on this, I think. I think they're going to. I don't trust.
Yeah,
them
anybody
to,
signing him is gonna overpay badly. Like yeah. That's just the nature of signing a 29 or 30 year old goalie mm-hmm. who's good.
Mm-hmm. They do have the tax benefit though. That'll help them a little bit at least.
In theory,
a little bit. I think. We make too much out of the tax thing, but every little bit will help.
I don't know, Sean. I was told by people in Toronto that's the only reason the Lightning are successful is because of the tax benefit in Florida.
Clearly.
Well, also the playoff format, which exists only to hurt the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes. All right. We'll get to that in a second. We should go through some of the other coaching shit. We're doing the show on Monday, so apologies if you already know who's coaching some of these teams. But the Kings asked for permission to talk to Todd McClellan. There does seem to be some connection there. Obviously, Rob Blake played for him. What's interesting about that, let's say McClellan ends up in L.A. for some reason. That was a dude that was being linked tangentially with the Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers not only, you know, held their presser today, but put Scott Gordon in front of the media, which tells me that maybe with Quenneville off the table, potentially McClellan off the table, like maybe Scott Gordon is like his numbers come up on the coaching carousel for the Flyers. Maybe he sticks there.
Yeah, that would make sense. Like, I don't think he did a particularly, like, bad or, I guess, good job. The thing with the Flyers,
he did
obviously...
A job.
What?
He did a job, basically.
Yeah, he showed up every day and was perfectly adequate. Like,
dressed which, well.
Yeah, and if you're the Flyers, like, being adequate as a coach is a real nice change of pace. Obviously, the thing with the Flyers is that if they had Carter Hart all year instead of, you know, pretending they were going to play Brian Elliott all season for the first month and a half or whatever it ended up being, you know, we might be talking about them being the eighth seed or even the seventh seed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that's for next year, and maybe maybe it makes sense to just kind of roll with what happens this coming year with Carter Hart, like a reliably 915, 920 goalie. And see where that gets you, because it was so bad to start the year that it put them insanely far behind the eight ball, and they didn't have the power to Carolina Hurricanes their way out of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that the problem there, though, is what happens if where Carter Hart gets you is like into a wild card and you kind of realize, wait a second, our coach is not a top coach. This isn't necessarily the guy we want, but the team has improved and got close to the playoffs or into the playoffs, so now we can't necessarily make a move and we're kind of locked into this guy versus just making the move and getting the guy now, although I don't know who their guy would be.
And I also just don't think that group's great. Like, that group of players isn't, you know, going to be good enough to get you into the three in the Metro too often, I don't feel like, even with Carter Hart. So,
yeah, and the guy, I mean, your GM's Chuck Fletcher, which means the next guy might be Todd Richards or Mike Yeo. So you might as well just keep Scott Gordon around, for God's sakes.
Who do I know from Minnesota, he's saying.
Yeah, who was somebody that was with the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Baby Penguins when I was in Pittsburgh that I can bring on the team? Or I guess Bilesma would be maybe the other guy then.
Oh, hell yeah,
we
could
put him in that mix too. Speaking of Bilesma, the Buffalo Sabres fired Phil Housley. We were talking about this before we started recording. I really thought that Phil Housley was going to be your prototypical guy with a short leash for next season, but I guess that the losing streak at the end of the year and how completely disengaged and shitty they were was the writing on the wall. And Jason Botterill, who, by the way, had a horrible press conference over the weekend. Like, it was just epically bad. Said that the way, you know, Phil Housley's resume before he got there was guy who made the Nashville Predators defense good. And then he goes to Buffalo and they're atrocious defensively. And so, like, when you're not good at the only thing you're supposed to be good at, you're probably not going to keep your job. I'll stop for on one point, though, that Botterill made that I still can't believe he actually said. Dude tried to sell it that the Ryan O'Reilly trade was the reason they were able to trade for Jeff Skinner, which neither is factual based on the salary cap numbers or the fact that they got Jeff Skinner for a C-level prospect that had nothing to do with the Ryan O'Reilly trade whatsoever. I was like aghast. It was like one of those deals where you're trying to explain away a mistake to somebody and then you just like invent something whole cloth just to hope that they buy the bullshit.
Yeah,
it was insane to me.
There was somebody in the Montreal media who in saying like, oh, it's too bad this horrible team that isn't that good at all. It's too bad they couldn't get in because, you know, all these guys had more points than the people they were traded for this year and all that kind of thing. Yeah. And it's like, oh, but all the guys you just named are also on good teams that made the playoffs. And maybe they're not having as many points isn't necessarily what prevented them from making or not making the playoffs.
They fire Housley, but where do they go? Like, first of all, where do they go in the sense of, like, what coaches are available that would be a discernible upgrade over Phil Housley? And two, I mean, they've gone through some coaches now there, and yep. You get the feeling that, you know, Botterill now, he's on the clock, like Tim Murray was on the clock. He claimed that Pegulas had nothing to do with this firing. If that's the case, well, now it's all on him. I mean, I don't know who would. I mean, there are reasons to go to Buffalo. And the reasons are Jack Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin, and then whatever they get in the draft this year. But there are also reasons why I'd never want to go to Buffalo because it just seems like this team that is going to be in a constant cycle of reset. Like this
they're
was
Edmonton
the team that.
Light.
Yeah, when they hired Botterill, it was the rebuild within a rebuild. Like it's a bad fucking scene there.
Yeah, it is. I was on the radio in Buffalo this morning and they were kind of throwing names around and I think the big question was, you know, to give you an example, they had mentioned Quenneville. Obviously that's off the table. McClellan seems like it's off the table. I guess Alain Vigneault would be the other well-known like experienced coach. That's still out there.
Defensive systems too.
Yeah. So I mean, because that's part of it, right? Is do you go and get somebody who is a young, up and coming, you know, bright young mind? Maybe you do. Except you kind of thought that's what you were getting with Housley, and typically the way these things work is you sort of swing back and forth between the new guy and the experienced guy. The one name that they mentioned that I was a little bit surprised to hear, but they mentioned Todd Richards, who is currently an assistant with the Lightning, and obviously anybody you can get from that Lightning organization is probably comes in with a bit of a shine on them. Not a huge amount of success as an NHL coach, as a head coach, so that's potentially a tougher sell. But if you're looking for somebody who actually has experience, unlike, you know, Phil Housley, where it was coming in, because this is, yeah, it's like Edmonton. This is not a job you want to be coming in as your very first time and trying to hit the ground running and figure out how things work, because the patience level in Buffalo is sub-zero right now.
Hear me out, Ken Hitchcock.
Ken Hitchcock going to a team with one young franchise player that can't seem... Yeah, that seems flawless to me.
Yeah.
Be perfect.
Ugh, what a mess. The Oilers are an interesting one. Speaking of Ken Hitchcock, obviously his fate will be left up to the next head, the next general manager. And again, if you want to read the tea leaves, Keith Gretzky, interim GM, sat before the media today, did the whole breakdown of the team, yada, yada, yada. Are we to believe that the Oilers will take the advice of all of Keith Gretzky's friends in the Edmonton media and make him the permanent general manager?
Well, I don't view this as the Edmonton media trying to push for Keith Gretzky. I view this as Keith Gretzky must be the leading candidate, and there are a lot of trial balloons being floated out to the media to try to just gauge how much of a reaction there's going to be when they make this decision. Because I know he's been around. My question is there any other team that if they needed a new GM today, Keith Gretzky would be at the top of their list?
No, but what you're not considering is he's friends with Wayne from when they were kids.
That's true. That is true.
Oh, God. It's one of those sort of like fantasy casting things where you wish that there could be a situation where somebody in the organization, Bob Nicholson, is the adult and says, you know, here, Ken Holland, here are the keys to the kingdom. Feel free to fire any of the 1980s Oilers that have been keeping this team in the shit for the last decade. But it's never going to happen. Nope. I mean, Bob Nicholson probably serves at the pleasure of the 1980s Oilers that are in the organization. So it's a systemic problem. Keith Gretzky is going to be just a symptom and an extension of it. I feel really bad that it's going to go this way, but this is just what the Oilers are. And to that end, I wrote about this on Friday. We should probably talk about it here. Connor McDavid knew what he was getting into when he signed that contract. Yes or no? Of course it's yes. He knew what the organization was. He knew what the situation was. He knew he could see who was running the show there. I truly believe that it is projection on our part that we think McDavid is going to be out of there. Like Elliot put it at 2 years. I mean, he's got a long-term contract. There's absolutely no, this isn't a Peter Pocklington thing. Like there's no compelling reason for the Oilers to say, we'll do you a solid. We know we're a mess. Go find your smile. Like fuck that. He signed a long-term contract to be a pillar of the organization for 8 years. He's not going anywhere. It doesn't matter if he demands a trade or not. There's no reason for them to ever trade him.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
He would have to hold out. He would have to do the Paul Kariya thing.
That's what he'd have to do, by the way. Which virtually never happens.
And then they don't have to ever do anything with him. Then you just don't play.
I don't necessarily buy the idea that he knew what he was getting into. I mean, he signed that contract after their one good year. I don't think he realized how bad things were going to get.
My man wasn't on Corsica, right? Like he wasn't looking at.
I don't think he was signing that contract, going, "Yeah, we're going to be 20 points out of the playoffs each of the next couple of years." But he knew
who was running the organization, though. Like he knew Paul Coffey was giving shit advice to everybody in the organization.
He was what, 20 years old at that point? We're expecting him to get a read on.
Well, you're expecting NHL his agent to get it. Get a read,
but his agent got a read. But on also, $100 million,
this is what I would say is he is just like kind of a symptom of how the NHL worked up until I don't know the Willie Nylander situation, where it's like no, you just sign as long as you possibly can. And that's just how it works.
Yeah, I agree. There's not more to read into it than, you know, on either positive or negative. He just – this is when you get your second contract and you're a star player, you go 8 years for as much money as you reasonably can get. And that's what he did. And things have changed a little bit since then. But I do agree with Greg. I mean, if he says, I want out, trade me right now, the Oilers' best move is probably to say, no, we're not going to do that. No. And then it comes down to – is he actually going to go and sit at home like players used to do quite often in the pre-cap days, but basically never do anymore, which I think is a very unlikely scenario. Like, the odds are higher than zero, but not by much.
Yeah, I mean, and it depends what next year looks like, right? Because if this happens again, or they're even worse somehow, which, by the way, they very well could be.
It's complete. Well, yeah, that's the thing about it, too. Like Elliot says 2 years. That's going to be the minimum amount of time it takes to undo what Chiarelli did there. like it's a completely fucked franchise. You got Chris Russell and Milan Lucic with no move clauses through like 2021.
Yeah.
Like it's going to take some time to undo the messes that this man made. He was a disastrous general manager.
Nobody is rooting for a lockout so there can be compliance buyouts more than Connor McDavid.
Yeah. But I so gotta say, if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm looking and going, okay, the Colorado Avalanche had 48 points and then immediately made the playoffs back-to-back years. The New York Islanders were everyone's pick to finish dead last, and they just finished with 101 points or whatever it was. I'm not going to have, you know, I understand there's a job in front of me. I'm not buying this idea that I got to wait 2 or 3 years before I'm allowed to evaluate how things are going. And again, that evaluation is going to happen behind the scenes. We're probably not going to hear about it, and it's almost certainly not going to result in some sort of big trade demand fiasco. Yeah. But if I sit down with whoever it is, Bob Nicholson or ownership or whoever, and they say, you got to give us two years at least to dig out of this, I'm looking around going, no, I don't have to give you 2 years to do that. It can be done faster. We've seen it done much faster by other organizations.
The thing about it is, like, the Toronto media always gets shit on by the other parts of Canada for being so up its own ass. And you know, when you do things like look at Connor McDavid's interview after the last game of a horrible season and start, like, analyzing body language and parsing words, and that carries more weight than dude signed an 8-year contract extension to stay in Edmonton. Like, yeah. Which one of those do you give more weight to as far as his commitment to the organization?
I'm going to give maybe more weight to the thing that happened last week and not the thing that happened 2 years ago. You know, and two playoff misses ago.
But like you think within the span of 2 years of missing the playoffs, then he's like, I decommit to this organization.
No, but yeah. I think he is enormously frustrated right now. And I think that when a guy with that much media savvy goes in front of the media and says what he said, I think that is a very obvious big flashing sign that he's waving, saying, I am extraordinarily frustrated right now. And I really need Caesar. That doesn't mean it's a trade demand.
But that is an evil Knievel over the Grand Canyon leap to I'm going to demand a trade, which is exactly where everybody in the Toronto media went.
Who in the Toronto media says Connor McDavid is going to demand a trade imminently? Like, I'm not buying this, like, David Staples act where you know, somebody points out that the star
talk about.
Yeah, like if a star player very obviously expresses frustration, it's not wrong to point that out, and it's not wrong to point out that, yeah, maybe at some point down the road that this is something they have to worry about. That's not nobody in Toronto is writing headlines saying Connor McDavid coming to Maple Leafs or Connor McDavid abandoning Edmonton.
Well, of course not,
unless you read it through the Staples lens of everything has to be about this, Toronto's out to get us nonsense, because that's the only story he knows how to write.
Yeah, he really showed his ass on that one. And like a more often, or like a more shocking way than usual, where you were just like, damn, that's David Staples. Like, that's the pure shit. That's the distilled David Staples high test shit. Like, on mids that day.
I feel like he has come to define the Edmonton media much in the way that Tony Gallagher used to define the Vancouver media, where, like, he'll write some crazy shit and then we just say, okay, that's Edmonton. Just like when Tony Gallagher would write, the NHL is conspiring to send Alex Burrows to the KHL. Like, that would become the voice of the Vancouver media. It's kind of how it always works. No, I think plenty of people extrapolated his comments to being like he's going to ask out of Edmonton. I think you guys are wrong on that. I saw that everywhere.
I must have missed it, because to me there's a line between this is the worst case scenario of where this could end up versus this is where this is headed, and I didn't see any of the latter.
You had Elliot literally say, I give it, it's going to be 2 years. Like, I give it two years before he asks out.
If they're still a complete joke of a franchise in 2 years, which is a very big if.
Yeah.
I mean, I think.
No, right. Because that was the thing. Like, I don't think anybody is sitting there going, like, he's gonna call Keith Gretzky and give him the trade me right fucking now speech from the Slapshot, like, tomorrow or next summer. But if imagine, okay, let's imagine you're Connor McDavid and you watch this team, and this team like picks Keith Gretzky to be the guy, like, permanently, and you just have to sit there and watch that for the next 2 years, like, you, after saying what you said, like, what's the frustration level like next year if you still suck? What's it like after another year of that? Like, I don't think that's crazy to say, oh yeah, why wouldn't you want out of that? I don't know that necessarily translates to, and I, you know, I didn't hear the thing that Staples quoted about what Bourne said or any of that kind of stuff. I think what Elliot said was like, yeah, this has to feel like 2 years max before, yeah. And like, right. That.
So
that's
and correct. Then, and then essentially we're doing the same thing that we're doing when he got drafted, which is we looked at his face and said he doesn't want to be there.
He doesn't want to be there, Greg.
Oh, why does okay. he? What? He said an 8-year contract, Ryan.
Right, but like if I make
what, I mean, like, what, like again, well, no, like, Greg, we could say he doesn't want to be there,
if and
we could
like play pop psychologist,
or we could look at the actual thing he did, which is put pen to fucking paper and right, say Greg, I'm going to be here for 8 years.
If I sign a mortgage and then 2 years into owning that house, the fucking chimney falls down, and I go, I don't want to live in this house anymore. That's not like yeah. me going, well, I gotta, you know what? I committed to right. this house.
Then you Greg. Put your house for sale and someone gets you out of the mortgage, which is not what an NHL contract is at all.
So, Greg, can I ask a question?
Mortgage is famously easy to get out from under.
So, Greg, do you believe that Bobby Ryan really wants to be in Ottawa for the next 4 years? Like, is he really happy to be there and it would be ridiculous to suggest that maybe he's not happy with how things are going? Because he's got a contract signed that goes for.
Oh, that's a brutal takedown! Damn! Wow!
How is that a brutal takedown? Here's the difference between Connor McDavid and Bobby Ryan. People would want Connor McDavid,
but that doesn't have anything to do.
No. It's a great comparison because you know Edmonton's going to have to fucking package Connor McDavid with Erik Karlsson to get him out of Edmonton. It's just nonsensical. One is a desirable asset, and one was
a wagon train
on the trade deadline for trying to get him off the cap.
We're only talking about whether a guy wants out.
I'm just pointing out that the fact that someone has a long-term contract doesn't mean they can't be unhappy with their situation and how things are going. That's not an unreasonable thing.
No. I'm saying that in every turn, he's done things to commit to the Oilers while the rest of the world was like, he doesn't want to be there.
Every turn, or just the one turn that when he did the thing everybody does?
Well, he's not asked out.
Yet. But if it happens in 2 years.
Yet. Again, but why yet? Why do we believe it's going to happen? Why is it a thing where we believe this is going to happen?
How the Oilers did this year? That's why people, and did you see his press availability? That's why people think he might want out. I don't think that's a crazy thing to suggest.
It's unlikely that any of this comes anywhere near the worst case scenario that's being outlined. But it's not an unreasonable take for Elliot Friedman or whoever else to say 2 more years of this and we could be nearing that situation. I don't think that is a hot take, and I don't think that's the Toronto media being unreasonable to point out that we're at least headed in the direction where something may have to give.
I think I'd like these conversations better if there was the caveat of the Oilers are in no way compelled to acquiesce to those wishes
right.
if they actually
want.
Well, that's the other thing is what happens.
And they will definitely say, well, tough shit. But
yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, in none of these conversations about Connor would probably is going to be sick of it, do we ever come back to, well, who cares what Connor thinks?
Well, but you do care.
That's the bottom line for me.
Your $100 million guy and he hates it there and doesn't want to be there, in that worst case scenario, yep. even if you can force him to stay, you should care because you've got a huge disaster for your franchise if that's the case.
Yeah. best of luck to interim GM Keith Gretzky, I suppose.
Yes.
Or else.
Anyway, this playoff preview is going great. Half an hour talking about the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, the thing about it is that, you know, I hope that Keith Gretzky knows that in order to make the team better, he's going to have to probably rob from the rich and give to the poor.
Oh, man. Much come
like
on.
Robin Hood did. Speaking of Robin
Hood. C-minus at best.
It's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options and cryptos, and all commission free, while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. That's a big deal. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started. You could start investing at any level. So if you're someone who wants to, you know, throw a couple shekels in an account and start playing around with stocks, by all means. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. From easy-to-understand charts and market data, you can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Very easy to use. You can also view stock collections such as the 100 most popular stocks, so you can easily just find the stuff that you want to be buying. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest, which is a good thing for someone like me who is a newbie who needs to be told when to do things. Robinhood is giving listeners of Puck Soup a free stock like Apple or Ford or Sprint. To help you build your portfolio, sign up now at PuckSoup, all one word, .Robinhood, all one word, .com. That's PuckSoup.Robinhood.com. Do check it out. It's a great app. And again, an easy way to go start investing in the old stock market if that's what you want to be doing. All right, let's get some playoff preview up in this playoff preview now that we've dispensed with the non-playoff teams. Eastern Conference, let's kick it off there. Obviously a very, I don't know if I like the playoff draw all that much this year, to be honest with you. There's some matchups that I think are kind of dumb and weird, but I think in the East, at least we've got some compelling ones. Let's start with the Islanders in Pittsburgh. The Islanders are the best defensive team in hockey. The Penguins are probably getting healthy at the right time, would be the best thing I could say about them. Cause I think they've had sort of a disjointed season. It comes down to whether or not you think the Islanders' defensive magic can get 4 wins against a Pittsburgh Penguins team that's pretty good at this playoff thing. What say you about the Islanders and Penguins, Ryan?
So I want you guys to try to guess what Matt Murray's save percentage is since he came back from injury in early December.
Is it like 943 in that
neighborhood? It's not quite that high, but it's 930, which is...
That's good.
Insanely good in a league where 905 is the average save percentage.
It's like Robin Leonard type numbers.
It's the exact number Robin Leonard put up for the whole season.
Okay.
And so I've been reading a lot lately in the Pittsburgh media, and I wrote about this for 31 Takes this week about, I don't know why people in Pittsburgh seem to be acting like this team sucks, but they are. They have as many points as they had last year in the standings. They did it with Murray missing significant time, Malkin missing significant time, Letang missing significant time. I think Dumoulin missed 6 or 7 games. I don't think this Penguins team's great or anything, but they're good. They're really good. And you know, Sidney Crosby versus the Islanders. It's just one of those things where I'm not going to pick the Islanders because it's Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I'm thrilled with this matchup because it's the fan base that spent 3/4 of the season hating me against the one that hates me right now. Because I apparently have run into a different group of Penguin fans than Ryan, because I suggested a few weeks ago that they were good but not great. And I had a lot of very unhappy Pittsburgh people telling me that they were great and that this was a, you know, I was disrespecting their, and maybe, you know what, I think this is an interesting series. Because if you were an Islander fan and you have spent absolutely all season screaming at clouds about how disrespected your team is, this is either the worst or the perfect matchup to go up against Sidney Crosby and the Golden Boy Penguins. That everyone is going to pick, even though you've got home ice and all of this. I'm picking Pittsburgh, not in a particularly confident way. I think the Islanders can absolutely beat this team. I just like Pittsburgh top to bottom a little bit more, especially based on the last couple of months of the season.
Yeah, I forgot to say too, they've been unreal since the deadline. Like one of the best teams in the league, like all the underlying numbers and stuff like that. So yeah, just more fuel for I think Pittsburgh's in pretty good shape. I think it's probably a 6-game series.
Islanders in 4. Kidding. It's one of those deals where I feel like the combination of the way Pittsburgh's been playing and then the infusion of Malkin, Dumoulin, and Letang back into the lineup at the same time, which is kind of what's happening as we start this playoff series, is a real boon. There are things about this Penguins team I don't like. They're named Jack Johnston and Nick Bjugstad. But there are also things about this Penguins team that I really do like, namely Sidney Crosby. And I the Islanders are finding ways to win games, and that's great. But in the playoffs, everything kind of gets more tightly played, and I'm going to always kind of err on the side of the team with the most playmakers in a situation like that. And I just think that the Penguins clearly have more of them.
Well, the good news is Barry Trotz has a real track record against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, that's true. Give him a series in which all five of his incredible players are playing at their best, he can definitely beat the Penguins. But I'll take Pittsburgh here, and I'll take it in 6 as well. I think this could be one of these series where the Islanders win the first two games, and then the Penguins come roaring back. But I'll take the Penguins. Just too much talent on one side and not enough of it on the other side. Washington and Carolina, speaking of talent disparity here, I've seen a lot of people kind of inching towards the idea of this being a Carolina upset. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that the Capitals went 4-0 against Carolina in the regular season, very convincingly. So what say you about Washington and the Hurricanes? The bunch of jerks, Ryan.
I picked the Caps barely. I can't remember it. I don't have it in front of me now, but I think I had them in 6 or 7. And I don't know. I think that Carolina is a really good team, and I guess I don't all the way trust the goaltending at the end of the day more than I trust Braden Holtby. So that's about it. I think probably the way things have gone since November, Carolina's the better team overall. But I have a hard time picking against a Caps team that won that division again.
I think this is one of those where I originally picked the Capitals, and then I realized I'd picked too many favorites, so I went back and changed it to the Hurricanes, even though I don't really necessarily believe that they're going to win the series, but you need to have a couple of trendy upsets in your picks. That's how these things work. So I could see them pulling this off. I like their story a lot. I think it's going to be fun to see playoff hockey in Carolina again. Like I wrote this morning, though, I feel like this season was the start of a story and not the finale of one in Carolina. So I think this is step one to them building something that's going to be pretty neat. I'm not sure that they're there quite yet, but they're close enough that if I had to pick an upset, I don't mind the idea of the Hurricanes actually pulling this off.
Yeah, it's the only team in the playoffs that really feels like a true Cinderella, with all due respect to Columbus. Like, they're just, you know, being it's Carolina, being they haven't made it in so long, and everything that they've done this year to be so endearing, I just think they're going to get waxed. Like, the Capitals are a team that now completely understands what they have to do to win a playoff series. Braden Holtby versus what Carolina has between the pipes is one of the biggest mismatches in the playoffs in the first round. I'll take the Caps in 5. There's not a single thing about the Hurricanes, I think, that frightens them. And if anything else, I mean, like, the Caps have been pretty proficient in winning the first round of the playoff series. So I'll take the Caps in 5, with the caveat that I really wish that this would go 7, and the puck is on Justin Williams' stick in overtime with a shot, clear shot at Braden Holtby, because that'd be awesome. The Lightning and the Blue Jackets, the Juggernaut versus the Just Happy to Be There. I'm going to take the Lightning in five, only because that's kind of what they've done in the first two rounds, the last two times they've been in the playoffs. Demonstrably the better team. The Blue Jackets needed a fucking shootout to get into the playoffs. I just don't expect this thing to be very competitive, but I'll give the gentleman's sweep here to the Lightning, with the Blue Jackets maybe grabbing a game three or something like that.
Yeah, that all sounds right. I don't know. I also have that as a 5-game series, and I, you know, where it's one of, like I said, like this is what Columbus burned an entire draft to get. Is to get waxed, just absolutely smoked in the first round. And, you know, Bobrovsky's maybe good enough to win him a game or two, but it's also the playoffs and he's Sergei Bobrovsky, so who knows? And I just, yeah, I mean, I have no reason to believe that Columbus has what it takes to even make this a competitive series that they ultimately lose. I think they've been fine, but they're not good enough. And that's the end of the story. I think they're probably they'd be lucky to get six is how I feel about it.
Unless the only way that this series is competitive is if Sergei Bobrovsky all of a sudden becomes regular season Sergei Bobrovsky in a playoff
series. Which is extremely possible.
It's possible, yep. But it hasn't happened in any season, any postseason he's had.
Right.
Yeah, but this is still a 2-time Vezina. Like I picked the Lightning at five. So I'm on the same page as you guys. I like the Blue Jackets' chances better than it sounds like you guys do, because I think, A, this is a team that you can't – I mean, first of all, I think I had this in the thing I wrote this morning. There's only five teams in the league that won more games than the Blue Jackets this year. So the idea that this was just like some, you know, not very good team that had to sneak into the playoffs, they won a ton of games. They're – in theory, this is one of those teams we should say – can be better than what their record says because they added so much at the deadline. I don't think they're just happy to be there because they know this is the last chance for this core. You know, they know the guys are leaving. And they got a Vezina winner in net, and I don't put as much stock in playoff versus regular season for goalies. I just, you know, give me the big sample size, and I think he's a good goaltender. And, yeah, I mean, this is a team that – I think is better positioned for some playoff success than people are giving them credit for. They're just playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are really, really amazingly good. And I think the Lightning are still have a tough road ahead to actually win four rounds and win a cup. But I just think they're overwhelming favorites over even a pretty good team in the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, Columbus is a team I was super high on coming into the year, and then they just kind of plodded along, and I felt like they maybe should have made a coaching change at some point, just because, I mean, you know, my feelings on John Tortorella are pretty well established at this point. But, you know, it really is one of those things where it's like, yeah, this is a good team, and it sucks that they had to work this hard to get into the playoffs, and it sucks that they have to then play a team this good, but... That's life. You're the 8 seed for a reason, and it's because you didn't have a particularly awesome season. So,
well, and it didn't have a particularly awesome season after the trade deadline too, which gives me pause. Like they had a lower points percentage.
Yeah,
after they made all those deals,
got better after the first. You know, took them a while to get going, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out if this is a team that's actually in the 8 seed because they're not that good, or if they're in the 8 seed because they only got 4 loser points and everyone else was getting 7 and 8 and 9 and whatever.
It's hard for me to get past that loss to Boston on home ice. Like it wasn't an overtime oopsie bounce bad bounce. They got killed
by the second best team in the league.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, and this is the best team.
Right, no, so, I understand. Like like I said, coming into the year, I thought they were going to be a really good team. It didn't end up that way, like over the course of the whole season. But with that having been said, like if they're the sixth, seventh best team in the league, like I think you could maybe make a case that that's true on like their best day, and they just didn't have a lot of their best days this year.
And as you said, two points behind the exalted Maple Leafs, who we talk about now. In a series against their arch nemesis, the Boston Bruins, I want to find a reason to take the Leafs in this series. The only thing I can think of is that it'll probably go seven, and then at game seven, anything can happen. But by every metric, by every narrative, by every psychological measure, and also based on the eye test, I got to take the Bruins in seven. I don't want to. I think it's kind of a fun pick to take the Leafs here and say that they're going to, now with Tavares, get over the hump. I just don't see it with this Bruins team across the ice, though.
Sean, go for it, bud.
Okay.
You're the Maple Leafs authority.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Well, see, this is weird. I took the Bruins in seven. That was ultimately my pick. But I think this series is a coin flip. Like, it's a very weird situation for me, because as a lifelong Leaf fan, I am used to always thinking the sky is falling and always thinking the worst and always finding a reason to be the most negative guy in the room. And yet, like, I look at, you know, people are looking at this series like it's some sort of 1-8 mismatch. You know, this is, you know, these two teams played last year. They went to game seven. The Leafs were a goal up going into the third period of game seven last year. And that was before they had John Tavares. You know, the Leafs can score with any team in the league. They had one of the, like, I think they were top five goals differential. You know, they have Frederik Andersen, who, you know, granted has been, you know, kind of shaky lately. And if he isn't playing well, then they're in very big trouble. But a guy who was a Vezina candidate for three quarters of the season. They got three lines that can score. They've got, you know, a pretty decent shutdown guy when he's used that way. And Nazem Kadri, who missed a big chunk of last year's series because he was an idiot and got himself suspended. Like, it, you know, Greg, if you're looking for reasons to pick the Leafs, I think there's a ton of them. And I think this is, you know, and I kind of said this to you guys last week, I think when we were chatting after we recorded. Like, this, to me, I could very much see this being a series where the Leafs go and win the series in five or six or seven games, and we all kind of look back and go, what were we so worried about with this team? Why were we all freaking out because Garrett Sparks had a few bad games, or because the defense didn't look good when they were missing two of their top four guys, who, by the way, are now, we're told, healthy and ready to play? Like, it's, you know, and that's all that's the view from Toronto. The view from Boston is that the Bruins are, like Ryan said, maybe the second best team in the entire league. So they've got home ice. They should be the favorites. And that's why I'm picking them. But the idea that this is, you know, it's hard to fathom how the Leafs would pull this off. I'm kind of perplexed by it, because I think this is a lot closer than most people are making it out to be.
You know what? Fuck it. Leafs in seven.
There it is.
Austin Matthews, baby. John Tavares, baby. Jake Gardner, baby.
Maybe
Jake Gardner gets the game winner in overtime to overcome the worst game seven in the history of game sevens. Motherfucking Leafs, baby. I'm making the DX chop on my dick now, because I am taking Leafs in seven.
Attaboy. You're going to be so
Bruins
disappointed.
I'm going Bruins in seven. because, you know, I like I said, I think the Bruins are the second best team in the league. Certainly their record kind of bears that out. But that's without... And this is the stat that I saw yesterday that kind of blew my mind. Is Brandon Carlo has been their healthiest defenseman this season, and he missed 10 games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you know, Bergeron missed time. Pasternak missed a month and a half or whatever it was. And you go, oh, all these guys missed time, and that team still has that record in that division. They're really good. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs are also really good. They had, I think, the fifth or sixth best record in the league this year. And they are also in the division with the two best teams in the league. And they certainly melted down a bit at the end of the year. But that felt, to me anyway, like a hiccup. I don't see the Leafs every day. But, you know, that's how it seemed to me. And so I don't know. I'm picking the better team, but I think they're not...
Come on,
so much better.
Come over here.
No,
Red Rover, let Ryan come over.
My picks are already in. All the Islanders fans have said, you clearly know nothing about hockey to me already, because I posted the screenshot of my bracket. And I have to stick with the Bruins. I think they're the better team with the better defense and not the better forward group, so...
So the thing about there's two strains of Jack Adams sickness. The first strain is you took a middling team and made it good, and that means you're the coach of the year instead of John Cooper. The other Jack Adams sickness is you coached the team through all of these injuries, and that means you're a better coach than John Cooper, whose team had the nerve to stay healthy. Like, I just don't get it. I've seen a ton of people saying Cassidy should be like not only a finalist for the Jack Adams, but potentially win it because he coached the Bruins to fewer points through a bunch of injuries this year. I'm not saying it's not an impressive job. I'm not saying that at all.
He should be in the top three.
I just don't like the idea that because John Cooper, A, is guilty of having an incredibly talented team, and B, is guilty of having a team that stayed healthy, and then C, took that team to within a few points of being the greatest regular season team in the history of the NHL and tied the record for the most wins in the history of a regular season. It's just nuts to me that like there's these other caveats there, and they're good, and they're used to detract from what Cooper did with the Lightning is my problem with it.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I think Cassidy should be third in the voting.
Who'd you kick? I'm curious who you kick out, because Cooper and Trotz are clearly in.
Yes,
right. They're like top three.
Yeah.
Would you kick out Berube then, or like who'd be the other guy?
Yeah,
that wouldn't
be
in
there?
What about Bill Peters? Like Bill Peters led his team to a bigger jump in points than Barry Trotz did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were five really good coaching jobs in the league this year, and the last three are pretty close together, and I think there's arguments for, well, really one guy to win it, but like three guys to be the third guy behind Trotz.
Trotz is going to win it. I mean, like,
Thing, of course he is.
He's got the story, and then he's got the most easiest thing to point to, which is bad defense became good defense, which, by the way, is such a fucking shade thrown at Robin Lehner, who got his life in order, actualized as the goaltender that Tim Murray thought he could be when he traded a first-round pick for him. But then, like, he goes to the Islanders, has this remarkable turnaround season, and then it's like, oh, you're just a product of what Barry Trotz did. That's kind of what you're saying when you talk about the Islanders' turnaround and goals against, without referencing the fact that Robin Lehner played a major role in that turnaround. I kind of feel bad for the dude.
Oh, yeah. I really feel bad for the MAGA guy. He's had a tough go with things.
Now, which one? I mean, Thomas Greiss is there, too. Yeah, you have to be more specific.
Yeah, it's a really likable team on Long Island. That's what I've been saying all along.
Yeah, Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss basically built a wall in front of that net the whole season. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, so that should be fun. Eastern Conference is cool. I think you sold me on the Leafs. It's going to be a fun series. And if you want to see any of these series, I don't give a shit. This is going to be the worst transition ever.
Use our friends at SeatGeek. I got to tell you.
Use our friends at SeatGeek. You know, the ticket industry hasn't changed in a long time. There are a bunch of big companies who have been around forever, and they don't really care about making the experience easier for the customer. We're not saying any names, but I think you know who the master of those tickets are. Well, with more than 50,000 five-star reviews in the App Store, SeatGeek is focused on making your experience as easy as possible. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets from all over the web, rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and displays them on an interactive seat map so simple that you can find out what you're looking for. The green dots are the good deals, the red dots are overpriced, and the bigger the green dot, the better the deal. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. I've got the app on my phone. I use it for everything that I buy, insofar as hockey tickets, concert tickets, Broadway tickets, back when I lived in Manhattan. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, German pronunciation. When you use our promo code SOUP, you could use that for all kinds of tickets. SeatGeek supports our show. Go support them, and also obviously take pictures of yourself at these games and tweet them at us and SeatGeek when you do. Remember, that's promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells SOUP, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Western Conference, Nashville and Dallas. I'm gonna withhold my pick until I hear what you guys say. Go ahead, Ryan.
I picked the Predators in seven, and I don't feel great about it. I don't really trust either team. I just think the Predators are maybe a little bit deeper up front, and Rene can kind of pull his head out of his ass and stand on his head again. I don't know. I don't feel great about it. I think this is even more of a coin flip than any of the series in the East.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much in the same zone. I had I think I picked Nashville, but it's I don't feel great about Nashville at all by any stretch. But Dallas, I mean, the reason you would pick Dallas is you'd say that when you need, if you're going to pull off an upset, typically in the NHL you do it with a hot goalie, and Dallas has got a great goalie who and a team that doesn't give up a lot of goals. And so if you got to just wear maybe a more talented team down with 2-1 games, they're
I'm torn on this one because I don't know if
I'm just
like
not
overall
sure they can score the 2 goals to win those 2-1 games.
Yeah, there's a part of me that is worried about the offense here for the Dallas Stars. That worries me. But their defense is impeccable, and I've not liked the way that Nashville has played all that much. Ah, boy. You know what? I'll take Dallas in six. Why not? Upset City.
That's not like that doesn't strike me as unreasonable. I don't there's always almost always a few of these upsets. Dallas could be the ones. Sure.
Well, the problem is that the next series, I guess, would also technically be an upset if you take St. Louis against Winnipeg.
I don't think that feels like an upset either way. I don't.
Yeah,
like, I know it's like, oh, I'm going to take the upset special. I mean, in fact, looking at the odds that got sent around today, the odds makers are picking St. Louis as the favorite in that series, even though they're the road team.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that Nashville series is really tough. I don't like Dallas's offense, but Nashville is really not. I'm going to take Dallas in six tentatively. St. Louis, though, I'm taking in six against Winnipeg.
Seven
no,
for me.
Seven. No. Six for me. I'll take them in six.
I took Winnipeg. Winnipeg is like my. I have no real good information or logic to back this up, but they're my gut pick to go deep. I just think they've got a ton of talent. It clearly hasn't been clicking this year, especially down the second half. But I feel like the Stanley Cup typically gets won by a team that just gets hot for 2 months and has enough talent that when they do get hot, they can overpower other teams. And I think Winnipeg is potentially that team. So as far as like being my long shot pick to go deep, I kind of like the fact that you've got a Winnipeg team that everyone was picking as a cup favorite this heading into the year and seems to have given up on because St. Louis has come along. I don't know. This just feels like one of those things where the herd is all going so far in one direction that I'm my gut is telling me to go the other way.
We have some breaking news, by the way.
Yes.
Looks like Todd McClellan going to the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
According to Eric Duhatchik, who is a guy who knows stuff, this is he just tweeted this out as we're recording this. So,
you know, it's funny. Like, as soon as Quenneville signed for upwards of $6 million a season, the happiest guy in the world must be Todd McClellan because someone was going to sweep in and give him that quan. And boy, that Pegula money, I'm sure it's palpable for Todd McClellan.
But man, I get back to what Ryan said earlier that Buffalo feels like Edmonton Light. How did Todd
Diet Oilers?
So you go and you bring in the guy who couldn't get it going at Edmonton. I don't know. I guess it must have been an interesting interview, you know, because
you're intimately acquainted with. Incredible disappointment and failure, is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man. Okay, so you've taken Winnipeg, and we're both taking the Blues. I might switch back that Nashville pick. I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot. I'm not going to switch this one back. I'm going to take Calgary in six over the Colorado Avalanche. Avs, next season, potentially a Western Conference finalist, depending on how things break with the draft lottery. But this season, not nearly enough on that roster to compete with Calgary, despite Calgary's, you know, goaltending.
Yeah, that's my pick as well, Calgary in six. I don't love the idea of Dave Rittich and Mike Smith being your playoff goalies, but I don't love the idea of the entire bottom half of Colorado's roster being on your playoff team either. So, I mean, yeah. Calgary's really good. They've been good pretty much all year. Lots of talent there and all that kind of stuff, but they got lucky early with Rittich playing really, really well, and then he's been fine to worse than that. And then more recently, Mike Smith's been a little above average, but he's Mike Smith, so I don't expect that to last either.
Yep, I picked Calgary, and I can't remember if it was five or six, but everything you guys just said is pretty much right where I am too. I don't fully trust the Flames, but I do trust them against a Colorado team they are much better than.
This one breaks my heart because I want nothing more than the Sharks to go on a long playoff run so I can see my wife and my dog more often. But I think if this was any other team in the West, I might pick the Sharks in the series. I just think that the Golden Knights have been so great lately. And they get Fleury back, and he's going up against the worst goaltending in the league statistically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I hate this because I hate, you know, I'm a shoot your shot guy, and Doug Wilson shot his shot, Eric Carlson, the whole thing. I want the Sharks to win with every fiber of my being, which is hard for me to say as a guy who loves, you know, per diem trips to Vegas doing this job. But I think the Golden Knights are going to win the series, and I'll put it at seven.
I have Golden Knights in five. I think this is.
Damn!
I wrote about it last week. I think this is the absolute worst. Like, any team in the league that isn't, I guess even Tampa, like, that isn't Tampa or Vegas, I have the Sharks pretty much walking to an easy win. But Vegas is such a fucking bad matchup for them. Oh,
they're like
sucks.
The Leafs. They're exactly like the Leafs. Like, if you put the Leafs in almost every series except for the Lightning, I'm probably picking the Leafs over the Capitals.
I would.
But the Sharks and the Knights, it's just a bad matchup for San Jose, and they've played shittily, and their goaltending is piss poor. You're right. Yeah. Anybody else? I think I'm picking the Sharks in the series, but the Knights in five, huh?
Yeah. I think that all their underlying numbers since the deadline, you're just like, their expected PDO was like 102. That's how good they've been at both ends of the ice.
Yeah.
Like, expected PDO of 102. And they even beat that because they're a talented team and talented teams beat their PDOs. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This is a terrifying club. I guess it's not going to be a surprise. I have them going all the way to the Cup final again. I don't see a lot of flaws with this Vegas team at all. In much the same way, I don't see any with Tampa.
And yet, this is a Vegas team that finished 3 points behind the Montreal Canadiens, who didn't even make the playoffs. Like, are we that sure that they're that good? And I say this about 3 weeks ago, I wrote a thing where I talked myself into the Golden Knights being like my dark horse pick, and they were going to beat the Sharks and all of this stuff. And then I watched them lose like 7 of 8 down the stretch. I don't know. There's a part on paper, they're better than last year, but there's a part of me that feels like there was, you know, and I hate saying this because I hate these sorts of like squishy narrative things, but sometimes they're true. There was something there was a little bit of magic to that team last year, and it just doesn't seem to be
there
this year.
There's nothing wrong with saying that. You're completely right. You're completely right.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be there this year, and I just wonder if, you know, if we're not kind of forgetting that this is still a second-year expansion team, and, I mean, they've even as I say all this stuff, I still come back to Marc-Andre Fleury versus Martin Jones and going, you know, the team with the way better goalie usually wins. But I just, you know, again, this is kind of the same sort of theory I had with Winnipeg, that there's, you know, they've got the talent that if they can get hot. I think San Jose is the second most talented team in the league behind Tampa. And I've gone back and forth everywhere but net. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, in net, even you thought going into the year they'd be better at least, but I pick San Jose, but I flip back and forth repeatedly, and I'll probably have a different pick tomorrow. But right now, I pick San Jose. I think I bought in a little too hard on Vegas a few weeks ago, and then they let me down the stretch. Even though they had nothing to play for down the stretch.
That's so just the thing. They had nothing to play for, and you know, when was the trade deadline? Late February?
Yeah, like February 26th, I want to say.
They had Fleury for 7 games in March and April. Like, it's really hard to kind of gauge exactly what this team is in totality when you know, it's Malcolm Subban's team for the last month and a half.
Yeah, and if you want to say a bunch of these games are going to be like 4-3 or whatever, yeah, sure, absolutely. They're both, like Sean said, they're the Sharks everywhere but in net are incredibly fun to watch, incredibly talented, all that kind of stuff. But I just look at Martin Jones and his .885 save percentage or whatever the number is, and I go, I can't pick.
Yeah, that's
these guys over Vegas.
It's easy to look at some trends like what Sean did with Winnipeg and say, I could see this team when the bell rings, they're not going to be as shitty as they've been. They're going to figure it out. They're going to play like Winnipeg. They're going to look like Winnipeg. I can't make that case for when the bell rings, the Sharks goaltending gets good.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Bell rings, Martin Jones comes out rampaging out of the corner, trips over his own feet, and knocks himself out. Like, that's
Bell rings, Bell slides through Martin Jones's 5-hole.
That's right.
It's just not – it's. I just can't make the case that all of a sudden this –
But Aaron Dell on the other – no, I'm just kidding.
I really wish that Ryan Miller rumor had been true at the trade deadline. Like, I'd be so much more into this team if that were the case.
I would have him going to the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, I want the best for San Jose. I want the best for Eric Carlson. I'd certainly want the best for Joe Thornton and for Salieri to Crosby's Amadeus, Logan Couture. Like, I want the best for all of these people, but I just hate this matchup for them.
It sucks. It's such a bad
But you know
matchup.
What? It's an awesome matchup for the rest of us. This is going to be
this is going to be the most fun 5-game series.
I'm covering the series to start.
Hell yeah.
It's funny, like ESPN, like part of our coverage plan obviously is what series our TV is most into, like where Emily and I will do like hits for TV and stuff. And the top of the pops were Boston, Toronto in this one, which I thought was interesting. I thought maybe the Islanders and Pittsburgh might be a little bit higher on the ranking, but these are the only two that they were like, yeah, definitely we should cover these. So it should be a fun series. All right. Well, there you go. Full playoff preview. That luckily lasted longer than the McDavid conversation. I just realized, do we want to touch on the draft lottery real quick or what? Because this will come out, I guess, the day of, around that time. Not to get into another protracted debate, but Sean is a huge proponent of the Gold Plan, which is the Adam Gold's draft lottery scheme in which the teams that gain the most points after they're eliminated get the top picks versus the current format in which the worst teams go into a lottery and potentially get the first overall pick. By the way, that would be Detroit this year under the Gold
Plan. Detroit would have won, yeah. So
state your case.
My case is that the current system, as we've kind of always known it, is not good, because what happens is if your team isn't good, which happens to, I mean, every year there's a certain number of teams that just are realistically out of the playoff race halfway through the season. You really have no reason to keep watching. And that on its own is bad. But what's even worse is that as the season stretches on, you start having to root against your own team, because rationally every win actually harms you, because it hurts your lottery odds. The beauty of the Gold Plan is those bad teams still get an advantage because they get eliminated first, so they get a head start. They get a more runway to bank points. But now you're actually earning your draft position, and you're doing it by winning versus by hoping your team loses and then crossing your fingers for some ping pong balls, which I just don't think is a very good system. I think it's the Red Wings are a great example. I mean, this is a team that got hot down the stretch. I heard from a lot of Red Wings fans going, yeah, I'm glad my team won, but this sucks because we're killing we had a chance at, you know, having the number two odds, and now we're down at 4 or 5 or whatever it is because we won some games down the stretch. I think it would be a lot more fun to see teams trying to win their way to the top pick, and some of these games down the stretch, you know, Buffalo against Detroit that you would never watch in a million years suddenly become really important games with high stakes, with fans who are cheering for their teams to win. I just think it's a better system. I know there's no chance the NHL would ever adopt it, but I'm going to keep harping on it anyways because I don't like the current system, and I think this one, while not perfect, is far better.
So I think what you and Shane Doan are saying here, like, kind of...
Shane Doan, by the way, put over this plan as, like, I don't know, he mentioned the plan, I guess, in conversation with Pierre LeBrun, and LeBrun was like, Scotty, this is the best plan ever. Shane Doan invented it.
No, exactly.
Yeah, we're all like nobody.
because I was trying to remember, like, if there were any other particulars of the goal plan. I Googled it this morning, expecting that we would talk about it, and I found that, like, this started with Shane Doan mentioning it in, like, 2016, and then, like, it coming up every once in a while since then.
Well, it started years before when Adam
got. Well, no, but, like, I'm saying Shane Doan said it.
Yes,
in 2016,
Shane Doan invented it in 2016.
In 2016, that's correct. So my thing with it is, like, I like getting the randomness of the draft lottery out of there. I like the idea that, like, you're making – look, I'm not going to watch a Buffalo-Detroit game in February or March for any reason. But
fair.
But if you want to, like, say, oh, this is a reason to get fans in the building or whatever. But my problem with it is, finally – a reason for GMs to play it a little bit safer. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no trades at the deadline.
But
like, that would, that, it
no,
would suck.
But here's my thing, though. The New York Rangers are not going to hold on to Kevin Hayes and pass up a first-round pick at the deadline so that they can be a little bit better down the stretch to try to improve their odds on a top pick. Teams aren't going to be... Teams aren't going to hold on to guys.
If the pick is Connor McDavid or Auston Matthews,
yeah, like,
and you know that by keeping Kevin Hayes, you're going to win more, which means you're going to push back. Like, that's the thing. There's this kind of yin and yang of it, where the better you are, the fewer games you get to win. So I think the odds that a team is going to turn down a first round pick for a guy, you know, that might help them down the stretch is minimal. Now they might, maybe they don't make those. You know, I'm going to trade my third line winger for a fifth round pick, and we lose that at the deadline. Okay, I'll live with that because, you know, I think those are kind of those trades are the empty calories of the trade deadline, anyways. Do you think the Ottawa's going to keep, like, let's pretend Ottawa actually had their pick this year? You think they're keeping Mark Stone and Matt Duchene?
Well, they're gonna keep Bobby Ryan because he wants to be there.
That's no, they maybe keep one of them.
No, there's no way that, you know, GMs are going to even just, you know, again, getting back to my theory that GMs are, you know, cover their own behinds before anything else. They're going to want to be able to bank things and say, I have these first round picks. I don't think, you know, you could, I'm sure somebody, if we ever had this system, somebody could sit down and figure out, like, what is the expected value of, you know, a player down the stretch. I don't think it would be as high as we think. And I think it would be worth the trade off. To get rid of these, like the ultimate test case and or you know, case study for this plan is that the, you know, during the McDavid year, the Buffalo Arizona game where they're playing and they're in Buffalo and Sabres fans are openly cheering for the Coyotes to win because
that
makes sense.
No, it was cool.
And it was interesting, but it was it embarrassing. And you know, imagine that same game, except now it's like the winner gets Connor McDavid. The place would have been a madhouse. It would have been amazing.
According to Buffalo fans, they didn't really want McDavid. They just wanted either McDavid or Eichel.
I forgot. Yeah, yeah.
If you want to say, I'll give you this. As long as we're doing stuff that's not going to happen, let's abolish the draft. But if we're going to have the draft and do a thing that isn't going to ever happen, it should be like a four-team round robin like the five worst teams or the four worst teams play each other during the playoffs, like off days during the playoffs or something like that. And then the winner of that tournament, like the seeding, like whatever you get for points in that tournament determines who gets the first pick.
Do the unrestricted free agents play in this game?
Yeah, because it's still during the season. Their contracts end June 30th.
Okay, because they don't give a shit about this. Like, yeah. They just like legitimately
it's worth a million dollars or like
now we're talking.
Who cares?
How about make it $101,000 just so you can give more support than the women's leagues? Now look. my issues with the gold plan are legion, but in short summary, bad teams are bad, and asking them to all of a sudden do something that they couldn't do the rest of the season so they can get a higher draft pick is nonsensical.
No, it's not.
As Ryan pointed out, the trade deadline would suck. This is a variable, but I do think that it factors into it. But like, if one team has a cupcake of a schedule after they're eliminated, while another team is maybe in a really, really tough division, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of unfair
unfair, and there would be an element of luck involved. What else has an element of luck? Ping pong balls bouncing around in a barrel. So, I mean, you can't defend the current system by saying there would be luck involved in something else.
Two of my biggest problems with the gold plan, one is on the ice and one is off the ice. You are really going to, and this is reality, you are going to dramatically cut down on the number of opportunities for younger players to get into the lineup if you have to gain points in order to get Connor McDavid in the draft. Like, you're just not playing kids. You just won't. You're going to overplay veterans. And then what's the main criticism of coaches down the wing? Well, he never played the kids. Well, he wouldn't play the kids if you have to get points after elimination in order to get
top. If he's not playing the kids and the kids are better, then that's bad coaching. And that does happen all around the league. But I don't think that's a problem that this system needs to resolve. If he's not playing kids because the kids aren't good enough and the veterans are better, then... Yeah, I mean, if I'm buying tickets to the game, I don't think the fact that he's playing his optimized lineup instead of throwing some kids out there for the scouts to get a look at is really a problem.
But kids make mistakes.
Yeah.
And veterans make fewer of them. And
that's
just
the
fact of life.
That's necessarily true.
Okay, but well, no, but it's, be, I mean, yeah. Come on, it's true. Rookies are gonna screw up more, but that's why you start rookies. Like, I mean, you know, you give them time in garbage time in a season so they can work through their shit and figure out a thing or two. And if it comes down to having to gain points to get the top pick, they're not going to get that opportunity.
You have to weigh various, you know, just like any team at any point, you have to weigh the different things that you could be doing. You know, do you want to squeeze every point or do you want to let those young guys, same as, you know, teams heading down playing for playoff seating, have to figure that stuff out. You mm-hmm. know, having these guys make more decisions it is a problem if you're a GM. And again, you're just going to put whatever system makes everyone's jobs the easiest in there. But I don't mind having that little extra layer of decision making in front of these guys.
Go ahead. Sorry.
To address your first point, because this is the one that comes up the most often I hear, is people say, well, bad teams are bad for a reason and you can't. You know, these teams get, you know, typically the bad teams, like the last place teams, get 10 or 12 or 15 games. And most of the other teams are getting 5 or 6. This is a salary cap league with a ton of parity. We do revenue sharing. We do all sorts of things to even the playing field. And we give out points for losing. If you can't bank as many points in 15 games as other teams can bank in 5, you are either blatantly tanking or you are completely incompetent, and we shouldn't be rewarding either one of those, and we shouldn't be sentencing players to have to go play for, you know, great young players who can be superstars in this league to have to go play for those franchises. I don't buy that this is so outrageous to expect teams in a league that has more parity than any other league in the world to actually go out and win a few games down the stretch. I don't think that's an unreasonable ask.
Which is, again, nuts, the idea that if a team plays well for a month at the end of the season, they're not a horrible team. I just don't get the logic of that. But to your point, though, the Kings would have been second in the gold plan. My biggest problem with this plan is I don't philosophically believe that tanking is a problem. I just don't. Like, I feel like if you want to throw away a couple seasons
and you are willing to make that gamble with your consumer base, and you believe that there is a foundational generational talent that you're chasing, and you're going to put it on the line to not only throw away a couple seasons to get that, but also with the acknowledgement that it's a fucking lottery, more power to you. I mean, that should be your choice. I don't necessarily think that this is a bad thing. I think that people point to that game in Buffalo the same way people pointed to the Matt Duchene offside and saying, like, that's the reason we need this thing, and then the thing ends up being a bad thing.
Maybe.
Like, I
take your argument. I mean, if you think the current system is fine, then there is not a reason to look for alternatives. I don't think the current system is fine. I think tanking sucks. I think it makes a joke out of the games. I think it's an awful situation to be in. I'm a Leafs fan. My team's been usually towards the bottom of the standings. It sucks to watch your team play and they win and you feel bad about it and you're mad at, you know, Boyd Devereaux or whoever scored the hat trick because he screwed your draft position. It's just a rotten way to go through what's already a rotten season. And yeah, I mean, maybe if you're a lifetime diehard fan, you live with that. But this is a league that has a lot of fans that are, you know, maybe not in that category or maybe could get converted to that. And I think just resigning yourself to the fact that a quarter of the league every year is going to hate the product you're putting on the ice down the stretch, I think we can do better than that.
Well, maybe next show we'll go over Ryan's idea to abolish the draft and the Florida Panthers never get another good player. Well, I guess they will now that Quenneville's there. But it would go back to when Montreal used to hoard all the players, right? If we'd abolish the draft.
I mean, there would be all kinds of we can talk about it in 1 year, but there would be all kinds of rules you could build into it that prevent, like, you know, you can only have three guys on your roster on an ELC or something like that.
All right, we'll get to that. Mark it in your calendars.
Mark calendars, folks. Here we go.
We're going to
institute the gold plan and then immediately abolish the draft, and I will be happy for 1 day. Be one day more than usual.
By the way, I'm gonna take Nashville in seven. I decided I'm gonna get that in on the wire. Nashville in seven, St. Louis in six, Calgary in six, Vegas in seven. There you go. All right, that's Puck Soup for this week. We did the show early, so you can get all of our picks. Make sure you take all this money to the bank and lay some scratch on the line in Vegas or wherever you make your sports bets, because obviously this is expert advice and it's for free. I'm watching a show called Action on Showtime about guys who sell their advice for sports wagerers, and it's pretty great. Oh, yeah, question of the week, by the way. Jesus, thank you. The question of the week was pick your first round upset. Kristen writes in, Stars over Preds because the NHL will want the series to go seven to promote the next Winter Classic and Bishop could steal Game 7. I am here for your conspiracy theory, Kristen, which is why the Capitals' next opponent is a mystery to me. Is it more profitable for the NBC-NHL consortium to have Penguins Capitals or Barry Trotz Capitals in round two?
Penguins Capitals.
I don't know.
Anyway, the upset of the first round for me, myself and Sean, if the Islanders win, so...
Cal writes in Jackets over Bolts in seven for no other reason than the massive pair it took to go all in, but the CBJ is swept in the second round and Brad Marchand licks Duchene or Dubinsky or anyone. Jackets over Lightning, says Mike the Hatter, because nothing would reinforce the playoffs are a series of coin flips feeling of nihilism than watching the best regular season team in quite a while get fortitude'd by landing on tails three straight times. Caitlin writes in, New York Islanders over Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a playoff darling, but the Islanders have been proving everyone else wrong all season. There is something to be said for the why not us against the world mentality of the Islanders that makes this kind of an appealing upset pick.
There is, except, again, like they're the home team, and the odds on...
They're not the underdog.
It is stretching upset a little bit.
I would say it's just ignoring what the word means, but yes.
Hurricanes over Capitals. Not. Robin Hartman writes in Hurricanes over Capitals in seven games because Mr. Game 7 needs one more. The team does a storm surge on the tarmac at RDU where the players line up and blow air to make their own mini hurricane, which knocks a bird-sellying Justin Williams over. That is an elaborate... That seems
By
to be
way,
something that maybe...
It is horseshit that they're not doing storm surges in the playoffs.
I know, right? Like,
congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations to that listener for putting more thought into that storm surge than the actual Carolina Hurricanes did to 90% of the ones they did this year.
That article I did where I ranked them last week was pretty amazing because you could see two trends. One, where they were just kind of doing whatever came to mind, and then it started to get more elaborate, and then it got to the point where you can kind of tell they're like, we have to stop doing this.
Yeah.
Because the minute they start involving the Jumbotron and shit, they're just like, come on, we're going to spend more time on this shit than we are anything else in the playoffs. Ollie Casket writes in, Avs over Flames because I love them. Oh, okay. And if they start Grubauer, they have a chance. And finally, Finner writes in, Blues over Jets, so every future team in last place in January feels like there's still a chance. There
oh,
you go.
God.
How beautiful is that sentiment?
Yep.
All right. That's the show for this week. I'm Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. You can read my stuff at ESPN.com and also at Wyshynski, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I on Twitter.
Ryan Lambert, sports.yahoo.com/author/Ryan-Lambert. Sign up for the Puck Soup newsletter. It's $3 a month if you get the bonus episodes already, or $4 if you don't want the bonus episodes, which the bonus episodes are good. We just did one about WrestleMania that was, I thought, fun. And other than that, I don't have anything to plug. So I'll be on the PDO cast this week if you want to listen to me talk about the Western Conference playoffs even more in depth than you already have.
Nice. You can find me at The Athletic. This is going to be a fun week. I've got my annual draft lottery power rankings coming out on Tuesday, so it might be there by the time you hear this. Also going to have the playoff bandwagon guide on Wednesday, and plus all the usual stuff, including today for my power rankings. I ranked all 16 Stanley Cup teams worst to most likely to win the Stanley Cup. So feel free to click on that and then yell at me about how I didn't rate your precious team high enough. It'll be fun.
Shum, for there me, my favorite team should be number one, just so you know.
Yes, it is. But they're not because I don't like your favorite team.
Yeah, no, it's because you don't know anything about hockey. However, if you had put them number one... Yeah. Lots about hockey that you know. So
then I know much.
Just something to think about next time.
Yeah. All right. Get your asses over to the Patreon for the mailbag this week. And thanks for listening, as always, to Puck Soup. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.